Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Book Wars Pod. I am Chris. I'm here with Kate and Kristen on our second go at an intro because Kate did not like my first one.
Hey now.
And we are here wrapping up A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller. This is our fourth episode on the book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Feels like it's been longer. It's been a long time since we recorded. Keeks, welcome back to the... I was going to say welcome back to the greatest country in the world, but we don't believe that in our hearts and dreams.
No, we sure don't. Thank you so much. I'm extremely jet lagged, only been up since 3:30 this morning, so I should be really sharp and ready to go for this podcast.
Guys, it's going to be another weird one, just to warn you. So,
I mean, I'm just saying, Keeks, you know what you could have done anytime between 3:30 in the morning and now?
Taking a nap?
Read the outline?
No.
I almost just, shot water across the room. Okay, that's...
Well, speaking of water, other than water, Kristen, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking water. That's it. I looked in the fridge to see if there was any beer that I could drink, and all of it's, at least 7%, and I was like, no, there's no Rainier in there, so...
No.
I'm just not having that right now. I had a couple of mimosas this morning, but other than that, not just water.
That's fair. If you started at brunch, it's you don't really want to power through.
This is true. Yeah. So, but I think I'm going to go to Oktoberfest after this. So lots of good Oktoberfest beers.
Nice. Fair.
Wonderful.
Definitely not Kate gonna and fall I... asleep right after this.
No, not definitely not. Mm-mm. Kate and I are drinking hot toddies.
Oh, yum.
Black tea and bourbon.
Because it's 80 degrees outside, but and just like
it's less than that in our apartment with air conditioning.
Yeah, I just needed tea to stay awake and also alcohol at the same time. So this is
to stay awake. I got it.
Well, our alcohol options are also limited at the moment. We're pretty low. So
yes,
I understand. We just went to the beer store, but we got only fancy beer. AKA, highly alcoholic beer.
Yeah,
fair. I respect it.
That always winds up happening to us when we go and get beer. It's just like we should just get something that we can just slam when we get home from work. And it's like, no, we're just gonna get this fancy shit that we're too afraid to touch, ever. But, you know,
well, it's because we don't have Lone Star here. Shout out to Lone Star, the national beer of Texas.
Ooh, hey, Bailey, if you're listening, we love you.
That is a thing. We had a lot when we were in Texas last month, and it was actually, super cheap, but it's, actually tasty and not just, water like Miller or Bud.
I was going to say, it's not just PBR. That's weird. Mm-hmm. That's what Rainier is.
You're great.
Okay. All right, and
is Kate leading the discussion again? Because it's the last Canara episode.
It is.
Okay, we get to extend it a little bit because next week we're talking about the Kanan comics, which we'll get into a little bit later. But
yeah, this is the last A New Dawn discussion. So Kate, it comes down to you.
I'm so sad to leave this book behind. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about this novel as a whole. The first thing we wanted to talk about. Is just the setting kind of at large and what the book's place is in the timeline, in the whole story arc that Lucasfilm is slowly pulling together that actually makes sense this time. one of the things that Chris and I noticed is, which is very appropriate since I think, as we said before, A New Dawn is the book that kicks off the rebooted Star Wars canon in terms of literature. And it feels really appropriate that this book really does feel like that kind of like rollicking space opera, old-timey feeling that you get in the original trilogy, which I greatly enjoyed.
Yeah, this one felt a lot more silly in a lot of ways. Like, obviously the other books had their moments of being funny. I mean, Rebel Rising, obviously, we talked as we were reading it, is more of a young adult novel, and so that had some light moments. Thrawn didn't have as many light moments, but Bloodline definitely had some, with Leia, just 60-year-old Leia punching out aliens.
Oh, so good.
But this one was because it was written from the perspective of characters who are younger than, Thrawn or Leia. But also characters who are in place in their lives where they're, with Kanan, going to make a little bit more of an irresponsible decision and going to be more of that rascal, more of that loose Kanan.
True. Yeah. I mean, I think that all hits the nail on the head. I mean, especially because Hera, at least, is the same age as Leia when we first meet her. in episode 4. So
yep, more or less, yep.
Yeah, right? Aren't they both 19?
Hera's 18 in this, but close enough.
Oh, god damn it. I'm so bad with numbers and time frames and...
Time is a flat circle, Keeks, don't worry.
I know. Oh, I get that now. I saw that, finally.
Well, I still don't. I just use it and claim it as my own.
Fine.
Because I'm a white person, and that's what we do.
Moving right along.
God damn it. Took us to, there we go. That took about 0 seconds to get off track.
But I think one of the things that really made it feel like the original trilogy for me is that, and we could talk about this a little bit more later as well, because we're going to talk a little bit about writing and storytelling, but this book is just full of really great banter. Like, yeah. Kanan's character, he is just full of one-liners, and this is true of him at any age that we've seen him in so far. We haven't read the Kanan comics yet, obviously, but I can only imagine. But I think that's really what contributed to that sort of, we were comparing Hera and Kanan's relationship with Han and Leia's. Yeah. And, like, their entire relationship is built on banter. Like, it's more lighthearted here, and it's, I don't want to say more respectful, but it's a lot less insult-filled.
Yeah. They bust each other's balls less, is what you mean.
Yes, kind thank of. You.
Yeah.
Yes, that is very accurate.
Yeah, I do also just want to be like, that's the Kanan that we see, except for when he's mopey dad TM. But
accurate. So accurate.
Gotta get that in there.
Yeah, one thing that I really appreciated about this book was that even though Gorse is in the midrim, you really do get that like really gritty, beaten down aesthetic that you get in the original Star Wars, because obviously Tatooine is, and Mos Eisley is the hive of scum and villainy. But like you have that sense of like these people are just going about their daily lives and they kind of hate it and there's nothing they can do about it. And like, even though we're only 9 years after Order 66, it's interesting to see how quickly the Empire has consolidated its rule and really turned from this republic, which, you know, flourishing is probably a little bit editorial because obviously the republic had its problems and then the Clone Wars and everything. But you do have, like, you go from the Republic where, you know, you have Naboo with its beautiful ships and Coruscant and everything and all these mid-rim places to this really broken down universe of Gorse and Tatooine and Calcaran Depot, like, being turned into, like, just a complete industrial complex and things like that.
Right. It feels like the Old West. It feels like, especially with the mining background, like, prospecting for gold in California or something like that. Mm.
Yeah, prospecting for literally everything to make starships.
Yay! Right.
Yeah, we should just change the name of the podcast for, like, the last 18 episodes to just, like, mining talk.
I know, right?
That's just really like, what
let's
it's been.
Talk about Dunium.
Yeah. Imperial Supply Lines, the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Woo! All right, before everyone falls asleep.
Wait, just can I just say
yes.
That I really want to go back to college and do my thesis on like the history of Imperial supply lines and in the Star Wars universe. All right, done. Moving on.
My God!
I don't think you can do that, but continue.
Probably would have been more effective than my political science thesis that I didn't write at GW.
Zing.
Just kidding. Raise high, everyone.
It's fine. Don't ask me. I wrote my thesis on baseball, so...
Your thesis is the best thesis. It's fine. So, what the hell is on this outline? Oh, I had a transition.
Did anyone read the outline?
I wrote the outline. Okay, it's fine. I had a transition, and then you ruined it. So now I get to be awkward and be vamping right now. So the next thing that we are talking about that was smooth like butter is question that we decided to put aside last episode and return to for this episode, which is talking a little bit about what happens to empires such as the Empire in Star Wars as they age. And a little bit helping with that, I think, is the short story Bottleneck, which is also by John Jackson Miller. And it's, I think, only available in the Rise of the Empire compilation. So what that is they did a bind up of both the Tarkin novel by James Luceno and A New Dawn. And then interspersed in between them are three short stories, one of them being Bottleneck. And what we see in Bottleneck is kind of interesting, because what we were talking a little bit about last time is that we're starting to see in characters like Ray Sloan and Baron Dantha that there's a new crop of Imperials coming up, and these are, of course, people who were born after the Empire took power, and Ray Sloan refers to them as new Imperials. And you kind of see, you get a good glimpse of those interactions, obviously, in A New Dawn between the rivalry with Dantha and Vidian, but you really, really see it, I think, in Bottleneck, because you have Tarkin and Vidian rivaling with each other, and Tarkin obviously, you know, he's the quintessential old guard, and he's got Vidian, who's all like, forget the old way, and then you have Dantha kind of like warming, trying to like warm around in there, so just...
Yeah, and for, since we realized that unfortunately this isn't a story that we can link to online, so while we wanted to talk about it, we realized some of you may not have read it, but basically it is a story about I think it takes place right before.
Yeah, it's basically how...
Right before A New Dawn. But it's basically about how Tarkin and Vidian are tasked, who don't like each other, are tasked to work together to fix a supply problem on... I don't remember what the planet's called. But on a planet where they're producing stormtrooper armor, and basically they work together. They overcome their differences in a heartwarming, you know, scene of... No, they still hate each other at the end, but... They respect each other's message and discover, like, a plot to sabotage stormtrooper armor and eliminate it.
Right, and it's immediately precipitates the events of A New Dawn, so it tells how, after Tarkin proves himself doing this task, that he gets assigned to Gorse to figure out how to mine Thorolide, and Ray Sloan is assigned to accompany him.
I think it's called Gilvanen, isn't that right?
Thank you! Yes. I knew it was G.
Yeah. Sorry, I looked.
So no, it's good.
I had it open.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Who knows?
But it is interesting, that dichotomy of, like, as Kate was saying, the classic military old guard versus the more, you know, the kind of old guard, but, you know, recreated himself under the Empire, efficiency mogul of Vidian. And you see almost like this... It's weird, almost like a decay of morals. I mean, obviously not that the Empire started on grounds of morality.
Oh yes, killing children, always good.
Yes.
Master Skywalker, what are we going to do? Sorry.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
Killing
children.
Oh, Chris loves it. Anyway.
Wait, a funny aside, just because, of course. Yes. I was tweeting from the pod today, yes. Or yesterday, or sometime.
Yes.
Maybe this morning.
Yes.
And I went into our drafts, and there's just a draft in there that says, have you ever heard the... And I was like, who did this? Chris, is that you?
That, I have no recollection, but it sounds like something I would do.
That could have been
like,
me.
Why is this just sitting in here?
I mean, by the law of large numbers, it's probably Kate, because Kate's on the Twitter most often.
That's true,
but
also...
Kate would also be less likely to make a stupid mistake like that, which puts it firmly in me or Kristen territory.
It really could have been Ava.
It just made me laugh so much.
Oh my god.
Anyway, back to my point.
We're done.
But you just see, like, this decay of morality of, like, obviously the Empire was... corrupt, and the Emperor himself was evil, and Vader is evil, but you do have these, like, career military types, and, you know, you see this in real life reflected as well, where you have these institutions that survive, and the Senate was pretty corrupt, but you have the military, and people who fought for the Republic and fought valiantly, like Tarkin, like Wolf Yularen, like all the admirals, who turned into what ended up being the Imperial military and intelligence complex.
Ooh, Yularen.
Yularen, you just like Yularen so much in the Clone Wars, and then
I know.
He's evil.
For those of who don't know, he shows up in the Clone Wars cartoon and is he does the voiceover at the beginning of every episode. Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, so you have these people who, like, in their mind, are fighting on the side of order and are doing good things and are protecting, you know, or preventing chaos in the galaxy. You know, they ended the Clone War and they want to make sure no war ever happens again. And then you have people like Vidian, and to a lesser extent, but we talked about it a lot last week, Ray Sloan, who don't really care about that. And they're just like, the Empire is just great because it's great. Like, it is great by nature of being the Empire. And their job is to make it, like, be the Empire better. And in whatever form that takes.
Yes.
And for Vidian, that's, you know, blowing up an entire moon to get Thorolide. Although that was also to save his own skin. But it's to increase these procedures no matter who gets in his way. For Sloane, even, it is to, you know, get Thorolide for the Empire and to play the politics game so she can gain power and gain influence and have more of a say in how the Empire goes. And there's no moral difference between those two goals for Sloane and Vidian, whereas for Tarkin, obviously he is, you know, the original blower up of planets, but like he's more doing it for the sake of order because he remembers how it used to be, and so you kind of have this decay of morality among the new Imperials a little bit.
Also, Tarkin hates Vidian so much. That's the other thing we find out in the short story. They really fucking hate each other.
But I mean, that kind of makes sense, right? Because Tarkin's a military man. Like, military people always hate business people.
For sure. No, it totally made sense. But I was just like, man, it's like there's just a lot of like people that Vidian hates and are hated by Vidian.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, totally. No, the other way. I just said the same thing twice. But I'm really in tip-top
shape.
Double
hated
here.
By Vidian.
Double hated by Vidian.
That's what actually all his extra circuits are for. Just more hatred.
More hatred.
I mean,
that's right.
That's what Vaders are for.
He's in fact wired to just be the most hateful motherfucker, so that's fine.
Right. Oh my god.
I know.
Thank you guys for carrying this podcast. Did I say, I have already forgotten. Did I tell everybody that I was very jet lagged at the beginning of this episode?
You did.
Okay, great.
Yeah, but just so they super know.
Just like Vidian is super hateful. I'm super forgetful and jet lagged.
Fair.
You're really adorable right now, though. I just want to hug you.
I feel like a toddler.
Oh my god. You're great. I love you. So I'm just going to go ahead and assume that you have nothing to pile on to Chris's point there.
Oh yeah, sure don't. Sorry.
No, it's good. I do think that's a great point. Obviously, everyone who's in the Imperial hierarchy is out to get power, but it really does seem like they become more power hungry, like, the deeper you go into the new ranks. And you see that a lot in Thrawn, especially when Thrawn and Eli are still at the Academy and all these kids are already, like, trying to climb the ladder. It's kind of disturbing.
Although, one counterpoint that I have just to leave here, and because we'll read it later, is Krennic. And you see a lot of Republic Krennic and then Imperial Krennic in Catalyst by James Luceno, which we'll read at some point. And that'll... I want us to, whenever we do read that, and listeners, feel free to remind us, whenever we do read Catalyst, remind us of this conversation and the difference between new and old Imperials and how Krennic breaks that mold.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I have a feeling that Chris might put that in the spreadsheet, so we might not forget.
I honestly don't even know if I will, because I have no idea when we're reading Catalyst.
Oh my gosh.
Somebody put a tag somewhere.
start
using the Twitter as a note to self app.
Yeah, because that works really well. I don't tweet a lot ever.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, anyway, moving on.
Yeah,
sorry.
So, you're fine. Chris is, like, very bossy today. He's just like,
he just wants to play on X-Wing. He just wants me to come to DC and so he can fucking wipe the floor with me in X-Wing.
It's true.
I mean, except for the wipe the floor part, I do want you to come to DC so we can play X-Wing. So if we have any listeners who play X-Wing, like, give me a shout-out, because we just found out, we just played X-Wing for the first time this week, and I'm obsessed and hooked already and have already spent way too much money, like, buying pieces.
Woo.
It's fine.
Nothing matters.
Yes, whatever.
we're all going to be blown up in a week anyway. It's
God
fine.
Damn it.
I was going to say, speaking of Star Wars shit and not things that are on topic, doesn't our Smuggler's Bounty come soon?
Yes, it does. I think it comes this week.
And it does too.
Themed.
It's going to my old address because I'm a dum-dum.
No.
Oops.
It's fine.
Well, isn't it the same building, though?
No. Sure.
Oh, like your old address.
My old address, yes. It's fine. It's fine. Nothing matters.
Yeah. John Additional shout-outs to Funko Pop's Smuggler's Bounty subscription box.
Yes. It's so good.
Give us sponsorship. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. And we found out, since we are off topic already, we also found out that all of the senior designer... I'm going to just butcher what...
Sculptors. The senior sculptors.
Senior sculptors. All women. At all Funko. Fucking women at Funko.
It's great. So throw all your money at them and be happy because
they have all of my money.
Like fucking of course it's all women who are designing these things because they're so fucking detailed. Who else is gonna do that but women?
Yeah, men don't care about that shit.
Hell no, they don't. Like, thank God for women anyway.
Men would be like, does it have pants? Like the QA checklist would be like, does it have pants? Alright, we're good to go.
Yeah, right, really.
This has been Sweeping Generalization Pod with Kate, Kristen, and Chris.
Yay!
Anyway!
Anyway. Well, this, yeah, you made me a segue because the Smuggler's Bounty Box theme for this month is Jedi. So we're going to talk about because you brought up Funko, we are going to talk about the evolution of the Jedi Order, and that wasn't on the outline to begin with. So just as we see a kind of a progression in Imperial thought and, I was going to say mechanism, but what the fuck is the word? Methodology. Thank you, brain. Okay. I know, thanks.
At least it didn't take you like 20 minutes like it did last episode for me.
I just took the GRE and I know all the words.
She is full of words.
So many words.
Sorry. I will never not think that it is funny when someone says that Trump quote. I have the best words. I have the best words. It's very funny. Anyway, continue. Oh my god.
Yeah,
I'm a menace.
And you're the puppet work in pretty much any scenario.
You're the puppet.
No puppet.
Oh my god. Guys, there's so much happening right now. Oh my god. I don't know what to do. Chris is like crying. We're canceling the pod. Jesus Christ. Anyway, so the progression kind of the Jedi Order is not so much self-contained in this book as the Imperial progression is, obviously, because the Jedi have a significantly longer history. But over the course of taking into account the entire Star Wars timeline, we're told that Jedi Order is, what, thousands of years old or whatever?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure. at least in the incarnation that we see in Phantom Menace, like starting at the very beginning, we know that the Jedi have a code and then they have all these rules about, you can't have attachments. You can't get married, and you can't do all these things that Anakin does anyway. Basically, if Anakin does it, then it's probably not allowed. But we find out in this book, and it's kind of hinted at in the prequel trilogy, but unfortunately, the prequel trilogy is not the best at delivering storytelling or world-building facts, and so it's not really explicitly stated. But,
or facts of any nature.
Yeah, sure.
Or acting.
Or just... So many
great things. Great special effects, though, so thanks, George Lucas.
Thanks, George Lucas, for that. We appreciate that.
Okay. but we found out explicitly in this book, Kanan says that the Jedi had a lot of rules, and some of them were tacked on later in its evolution, and then the Jedi Order falls. So, first there's the code, and then they tack on all these rules for being in the Jedi Order, and then Order 66 happens. And then what happens, as we know, is that there are remnants of Jedi spread out across the galaxy, and they're like Kanan, and they're left to fend for themselves. And Kanan decides that, once he decides after meeting Hera that he's going to be a Jedi again, it's really interesting to me how he kind of cherry picks what he is and isn't going to follow, and then what he does decide on discarding. It's fascinating because unlike Anakin, he has absolutely no qualms about leaving these things behind. And, one of them being, very obviously being attachments and romantic relationships. He's space married, all that sort of thing. And I guess my question is, where do you see that going for the future of the Skywalker saga and Star Wars as a whole, because we know that Luke becomes a Jedi and he restarts the Jedi Order, and then Kylo Ren fucks it up, and then
someone is the last Jedi away,
and then we have that really epic Last Jedi trailer, the only one we have because they haven't released another one. That Luke says it's time for the Jedi to end. What?
I said I hate this fandom.
What?
She hates this fandom.
Oh, okay, that's great.
How deaf are you?
I'm talking, and you're just mumbling in the background because you hate your mom.
I hate you. I love you.
So I know it's okay. You're poor sleepy baby. So Luke says it's time for the Jedi to end, and then we also get the season 4 trailer. And you're just still laughing. Oh my god, you're so tired.
I know.
The season 4 trailer of Rebels, where Kanan and Ezra are saying that maybe they're not fighting in the right way. And we've gotten hints from Freddie Prinze Jr. I'm going to stop talking in a minute, I swear to God. We've gotten hints from Freddie Prinze Jr. that Kanan, at least, he knows that Kanan's character arc is going to move him more and more towards the middle in terms of being a Force user. So all of that is to ask the question, just having this, what we know already about the trajectory of the Jedi Order and the Jedi and the Force, where do we think all this is going?
That's a great fucking question, Kate. If we knew the answer, Lucasfilm wouldn't be very good at their jobs.
It's interesting, though, because I totally see what you're asking, and yet to me that's not, I mean, obviously it's not answerable because we don't know yet, but to me it's also not an answerable question because it's two different questions, right? Because you're asking, what does it mean? What's the evolution of the Jedi Order for Luke versus what's the evolution of the Jedi Order for Kanan? And I think there's going to end. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens in Last Jedi and what happens in Rebels. And this isn't really speculation about, you know, Snoke or what happens to Kanan or anything like that. But I think you can see already that those are two very different things because you have.
Are they? Because I don't, but go on.
Oh, interesting. Oh, well, maybe we'll have a debate on this. Yeah. But to me, Kanan is coming from a background that's very different. That's from the background that Luke is from. Kanan is coming from a background of having experienced the Jedi and then having been at a point in his life where he did not want to be a part of the Jedi anymore and cutting all of that out of his life. And so he gave up on the code. And so to him, the code is less sacred. Whereas Luke is coming from a background of everything he learned about the Jedi originally is that they were heroic, that his father was a Jedi who he never knew. All of these, you know, incredibly powerful, positive feelings toward the Jedi and the Jedi Order and wanting to be a classic Jedi, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what that means, I don't even know that we know. And I think that's a question that the Last Jedi may have to answer about what Luke does with it. But to me, I think Kanan has almost more eyes wide open as he's looking at the Jedi Code and seeing where it failed, because he tried to give it all up before. And even when he decides to come back and train Ezra, he's made himself a life and knows, you know, almost how to tap into the Force while still being attached. To Ezra, to the Ghost crew, to Hera, obviously.
Obviously,
because they're space married.
Yes.
But I don't know. I feel like those are two different questions.
Okay. See, that's interesting to me, because I think you're completely right, but to me that...
And yet also completely wrong.
No! Well, see, you take the fact that they're two very different people with two very different backgrounds, Kanan and Luke, but I think at the end of it, I think it kind of amounts to the same thing. I think they're just different starting places that might actually lead to the same end. My prediction for Kanan and Ezra is that they're no longer going to be Jedi, even in the ragtag sense of the term that they are right now. I think that...
By right now, you mean where we are in Star Wars Rebels.
Correct.
Presumably.
Sorry.
Not like where we are in the Last Jedi timeline.
Correct. Yes. Because who knows where they are? Kanan's totally dead, guys.
So hard.
God, what if we title this episode Kanan's Totally Dead, Guys?
Oh,
Kate, they're going to be coming for you.
No, stop. I love you, Canary people. But I think, you know, again, I think Freddie Prinze Jr. is right? And then also, I think he just kind of runs his mouth more than Lucasfilm probably wants him to, that Kanan's going to move toward the middle, especially after seeing how how different he is in using the Force after training with Bendu. Because, you know, obviously not only can he become a more able, I guess is the word, person again. Yikes. but you just see him using the Force in a different way. He's just significantly stronger. And obviously some of that is attributable to the fact that he's a practicing Jedi and he's, you know, accumulated all that experience again, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. There's something that I think a lot of Rebels fans and that I have noticed, at least when I'm, you know, poking around on Tumblr, is that there's a really raw quality to how he uses the Force in season 3 compared to the first 2 seasons.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Cool. I mean, I think part of this that we need to think about is, you know, obviously the Jedi Order is thousands of years old, right? But,
yes,
you know, is it really coming to a point where, like, it's, I mean, it obviously runs counter to what the Jedi, you know, tenets are generally, but is it coming to a point where this the galaxy as it exists in the new trilogy is not a place where that can continue? Like, some modification is needed, and, you know, is that what The Last Jedi really means? Is, you know?
I like that a lot.
Well, wow, we don't know, like, what, you know, were there previous empires? Like, how, we don't have the benefit of seeing how the Jedi Order interacted with other empires, right?
With the old Republic.
Sure.
Yeah, well, because Knights of the Old Republic is no longer canon, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a interpretation of the title that I hadn't even thought of.
That's fantastic. Thank you. See, jet lag, not that bad.
Oh my god, it's so bad though.
It also kind of ties into our next point on the outline, which is something that we talked about last episode, and that's this concept of the Force or destiny versus choice. And this is something we've talked a lot about in past episodes as well, when we read Bloodline, when we read Rebel Rising. But it really applies here, because our Luke and Kanan guided by the Force and destined to end up at the same place of what their vision for being a Force wielder is, whether it's a Jedi or not. Are they governed by their choices? Kanan by his choice to forsake the original Jedi code and then his choice to train with Bendu, who is not of the light. He is not of the dark. He is, of course, the middle.
He's the one in the middle, as he says like 5 times in the season finale.
Yeah, anyway. Did you know that he's the rock in the river?
I'm so afraid of Bendu still.
I mean, I feel like that's probably accurate. But like, that's a choice. Like, Bendu was not a Jedi. I mean, obviously the Jedi don't have gods, but like, he is not of the light. Like, the Jedi are very much of the light.
Right, he's not like the daughter.
Yeah. Thank you. He's not like the daughter in the Mortis arc of the Clone Wars, where you have the daughter, the father, and the son. He's very much like of the middle and of gray. And whereas Luke has been trained on the light, you know, he gets more talk about balance from Yoda and from older Obi-Wan as they learn it. But like, he's been trained on the light. And so where do they end up? If they end up in the same place, is that guided by the Force because they had such different backgrounds? Or is it, you know, are they going to end up in different places because of the choices they make? And particularly, is the Force guiding Luke and Kanan and Ezra as they want to start to forsake the Jedi because the Jedi have been outgrown in the galactic growth of the galaxy? Or is that a choice that they're making because it doesn't work for them anymore and they need to find new ways to commune with the Force?
I think it's probably more of a choice for Kanan, but for Luke is an interesting case, especially in light of the last season of Rebels, because is Luke the chosen one? Is he the one who's supposed to bring balance to the Force? And that's where the question of the Force versus choice gets really interesting, I think.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have to, I don't know, maybe we'll do like a mini-sode after Last Jedi comes out, revisiting this discussion, and we know more about Luke and his motivations. But, like, I feel like there's so much unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and then we have the question, so we know that, well, we presume that Luke is at the First Jedi Temple, right? And mm-hmm. is him seeking that, like, the will of the Force? Or is that... like, is he seeking out the will of the Force by doing that? Or is he, it seems like by going there after, like, the traumatic situation that he had, that he's kind of, like, also trying to suss that out. Is it, you know, the Force versus choice? I assume that's what he's doing at the Jedi Temple.
That's what I think, too. I think that's a really great point.
Yeah. Like, is he trying to find the Force, or is he trying to find himself?
Right.
Or is it the same thing, Chris?
Or is it the same thing?
That's right.
Or none of the above. Mm-hmm.
Right. Totally. He's trying to find more robes, ponchos.
Yep. Also, just one other point. One other thing to take us off topic. I like how everybody was like suspecting that the book that Rey or Luke is looking at in the first trailer for Last Jedi is the Book of the Wills, and I feel like that's like officially canon at this point.
Right.
Because now that the Book of the Wills has been re-canoned by. If you missed it this week, you should definitely go back on at Del Rey Star Wars Twitter, where they gave previews of all the stories that'll be showing up in From a Certain Point of View that's coming out in October. And one of those, the last story in From a Certain Point of View is quote unquote an excerpt from the Book of the Wills, which is a super deep cut throwback to the Star Wars novelization written by George Lucas. Star Wars A New Hope novelization. Written by George Lucas back in 1977.
There's an epigraph at the beginning of it that has like some quote, and it's just like from the Book of the Wills or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's basically like a throwback to like George Lucas's original shitty draft of Star Wars, which was like the adventures of the Starkiller, something something of the Wills, blah blah blah, the Star Wars. It was an awful title. But yeah, so anyway, it's a very deep cut throwback to kind of that original George Lucas vision. And people were saying, oh, it's a book. Is it the Book of the Wills? It's got the Jedi symbol on it. And now we're, and then we got, of course, the reference to the Wills and the Guardians of the Wills in Rogue One. And now we're maybe going to find out more about the Wills and the mythology of the Force.
Yes.
So anyway, that's been your Last Jedi speculation podcast. That's our show. No, I'm kidding.
There's more.
There's always more.
There is more
trash for us to talk about.
Right. I mean, we talked, so kind of continuing the same overall discussion, but in a completely different direction of Force versus choice. One thing that we talked a little bit about last episode, but we shelved to talk more about right now, is that there's very little of the Force in this book. There's very little destiny. There's very little, you know these characters, you know where they're going to end up. And there's a lot of choice, a lot of individual choices that govern their actions in a way that kind of hasn't felt like it's as true in previous books that we've read. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, probably. At least in books that we've read that involve anything related to the Jedi. Obviously, we didn't get a lot of mention of that in Thrawn, but also, why would we have?
I almost felt like we did because we knew where Thrawn ended up, and we knew that he was destined to be a Grand Admiral, and we knew that he was, like, talented and amazing.
I guess so, and then Bendu fucked his shit up, so.
It's true.
It is absolutely true. That's why I'm still afraid of Bendu.
No, that's a legitimate thought to have. No, that's so true. I think that's right about this novel, especially because I'm pretty sure that the only time someone does or does not do something because of the Force is when, at the end of the book, when he and when Kanan and Hera are on Vidian's ship, and he's thinking to like whip out his lightsaber and start fucking shit up, and then something tells him like, "Not that, not now, not yet," and he doesn't think about it again until that moment on Kessel in Spark of Rebellion, the series premiere of Rebels. That's it.
Yeah,
that's the only mention we get really. Like he uses it, but it doesn't sure as fuck doesn't tell him anything.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's. It's weird because we had this discussion about self-made men and women, of course, but the self-made character in Star Wars and choosing their own names. But then we get into this very philosophical discussion about what is choice? Do we? It's like a very religious studies question, and it's kind of like the founding question of like all faith in humanity. Like, do we have free will, mm-hmm. or are we preordained to make the choices? Is Kanan's choice to go along with Hera and to attack the Forager and to attack Vidian, is that his choice, or is that the will of the Force acting through him?
Right.
No one knows.
Like, is the trauma that they all suffer due to their own actions and due to their own choice, or is it the will of the Force shaping them?
Right.
Like, is this very Christian theological is popping into my head. I know it's much older than that, but obviously in modern times in America, where most of our listeners are, Christian theological, is God shaping our actions, or do we have free will, and where is that balance?
Right. And, you know, I mean, you have that with the Greeks too, with those, you know, how long is the thread that's your life sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I need to watch Disney's Hercules sometime. Anyway.
So good.
I miss that movie. See, I keep trying to get Chris to watch it. Anyway.
I'm not against it. I've just never seen it.
Yeah, I know, which is horrible.
Mom and Dad James are Woods always fighting.
Not fighting. James Woods is always an asshole. So that brings us to probably our last major point of discussion, which is, of course, talking, as we do oftentimes, a little bit about the actual writing of the novel. And one of the things that we wanted to talk about was developing characters who we already know from the movies versus characters we don't. So A New Dawn came out before Rebels even started. So these were, when the book came out, completely blank slate for Kanan and Hera, as opposed to these other novels you see. Obviously, Thrawn has a long history in the Legends universe, and Timothy Zahn could work off of that. Books like Bloodline, they're about Leia. You know, Rebel Rising is about Jyn. We'd already seen her in the movies. So, just talking about, I guess, the challenges inherent in that, and to help us a little bit with that, John Jacques Miller was super, super nice to us and tweeted at us and told us to check out his website and his blog, where for every book he writes, he creates these posts that he calls production notes. And he talks a little bit about what the publication and writing process is like and how he got his ideas for his books and things like that. And I really highly recommend that you go and look for his post on A New Dawn. We'll tweet it out again once we post this episode. But, you know, he literally goes chapter by chapter and talks about all the Easter eggs and how he created these characters and how he was thinking about how their arcs lined up and all these other things throughout the writing of the book and the plotting. So let's dive in and talk about writing.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, Lord.
Like a sad little puppy.
You really are.
I know.
Oh, it's so right? sad.
But yeah, no, in all seriousness, thanks so much to John Jackson Miller for A, tweeting us at all and knowing we exist, but B, sending us this his blog, which was incredibly interesting as we read, as we were finished reading A New Dawn. And it's interesting because, like, on the one hand, you kind of have a little bit of both in this case, because you have characters that you know, because obviously he was told about Rebels, he was told that these are going to be the two main characters of Rebels before he started writing.
Right, but they weren't.
But yeah, exactly. He didn't know anything about them. Like, he knew, he worked with Dave Filoni, he worked with the Lucasfilm Story Group and the executive producers of Rebels, but Pablo. He didn't really, and Pablo, Pablo's on the Lucasfilm Story Group.
Oh, sorry. always out here to remind Kate that Pablo exists.
Thanks, Kristen.
But like, he was given, and he says in his blog post, he was given pretty free rein to do whatever he wanted with them. And so he almost had almost the worst of both worlds in needing to uphold these characters that would, you know, if Lucasfilm had anything to say about it, become beloved, and obviously they have at this point to many mm-hmm. Star Wars fans, but also come up with an original enough story that it wouldn't feel generic and boring. And it's just interesting to, like, think of what writing in a Star Wars universe means for those characters. And, you know, for the Skellies and the Zalunas and the Rey Sloanes, the characters that he created, kind of what that difference is as a writer to contribute that to the canon.
Totally. Casey, do you want to say something? I thought I heard you make a noise.
I did not.
Okay. Never mind.
I made a noise.
I don't know. I'm deaf today. Who knows what happened?
It's all good. I'm just sitting here. Sitting here listening to Dad talk.
You're the saddest baby. Oh my gosh. I think one of the most interesting things for me is one of the questions that we had when we first started this podcast is how much leeway these authors get in terms of creating the story and all this and that. And what we learned when we were reading Rebel Rising is that they actually get a lot more creative freedom than I probably would have thought, especially for something like Lucasfilm, who is trying very hard to keep a tighter reins on the story than they have in the past, which is why they uncanned all the legend stuff, because it starts just not making any kind of sense. And you really see that if you read Miller's production notes. He really has just created most of his characters. He's created the story. He says that he purposefully set the story much earlier than the Rebels timeline, so he wouldn't bump into it and then have to line everything up, et cetera, et cetera. And then the other part of it that's really interesting for me is actually one of the things that Beth Rivas said to us, she tweeted at us when we were reading Rebel Rising, is that that novels like these that tie into some kind of franchise, it's kind of like approved, sanctioned fan fiction. If you haven't read a fanfic or thought about trying to write one, you're probably lying, with the exception of like Chris, because he doesn't know what any of this means.
I only read Kate's fanfic.
You haven't even read my fanfic.
I've read parts of it.
Not the whole thing.
I read anything you send to me.
I literally sent it to you the other day.
Oh. Just kidding.
And this person just slinks away.
I know, she's not coming back. Sliding into my chair even further than I was before.
It's fun, I forgive you. But as Kristen just said, as a person who writes fan fiction, it's really fascinating, because when you're writing fan fiction, you're writing something that's riffing off of an existing storyline, and you're taking characters, and oftentimes you're throwing them into original situations that you've come up with your brain hole, and to round out a story, because any good story can't just have one or two characters in it. You have to also have original characters, or what the fan fiction community calls OCs, but they have to fit in the world, and they have to be, you know, as well-rounded as they need to be to make the story work. So being able to have access to Miller, I had to have access to the storyline generally, and probably some early renderings of the cartoon and the voiceover work to be able to capture the voices and get the tone of Rebels in order to replicate that better in his novel. And that takes a lot of work. That takes a lot of absorption and rewatching and just incredible familiarity, obviously, with the world, which Miller has already, because he's already written for Star Wars. And it's sometimes more work than making your own original thing, because if it's your own original thing and it fails, then you kind of only have yourself to blame. But if you can't replicate it, then it's just, I feel like you're just laying down more people. I don't know. I don't know what I meant by that, but
No. I totally agree and was about to make the same point. And this is something that Miller talks about again in his same blog post, his production notes for A New Dawn, which we will tweet out when the podcast comes out, and also probably include the link in the episode description. But he talked about how this was actually the first sanctioned canon book. This came out right after Heir to the Jedi. Maybe not right after, but it came out after Heir to the Jedi, basically because Heir to the Jedi was grandfathered in, as we'll talk about when we read it, if we read it.
Chris hates that book so much.
But he talks about how it was kind of this new experience of working with the Lucasfilm Story Group, the first novel that had been, that had had these rules. And I feel like the pressure is so much higher, because there is this explicit acknowledgement from the get-go that you are writing not just for Star Wars, because he'd written for Star Wars before, of course, but writing for Star Wars in a capacity that they require it to stand the test of time. and they are going to require it to fit into the universe, and every single one of your characters is going to be a major, by nature of their existence and the way the story is now so integrated thanks to the Lucasfilm Story Group, going to be a major part of the Star Wars universe.
Wait, Chris, are you saying that Han Solo punching a giant otter is not going to stand the test of time?
You know, it's...
stands the test of time for me. Time is a flat circle.
Time is a flat circle.
Time is a flat circle. But yeah, so like, I do feel like developing characters we know is hard, but it's almost easier in this particular scenario than it is to develop new characters for the Lucasfilm Story Group and for the Star Wars universe and making sure that they all fit. I don't know. I would love to hear, I mean, obviously, Kate, you're a writer. I'd love to hear if you have thoughts from your own experience on that. John Jackson Miller, if you're actually listening, you should definitely feel free to tweet us what your thoughts are. Of course.
Also, we love you.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, also, this book was great.
Oh my god, so good.
It was really, really good.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like that's something that we're also seeing in the movies, too, right now, because you have, obviously, the characters we know of Luke and Leia and Han in episode 7. But then we also have your Reys, your Finn, Poe, your new characters like DJ and Emmeline Holdo coming up in, The Last Jedi. that took a minute. But, and so it's the same thing of you envision a character as somebody who doesn't have as much of a role, and then all of a sudden they need to have all this backstory. You know, think of, I don't want to use Phasma as an example, because Phasma, you know, the casting of a known actress such as Gwendolyn Christie and like making her so visible kind of shows me that they intended her to be a major character from the get-go, even though she wasn't as major in The Force Awakens. But using her, because I can't think of a better one at the moment, like you have someone like Phasma who was, you know, for all intents and purposes, a fairly minor character in The Force Awakens, but obviously has such a huge role in the universe now with her expanded role in The Last Jedi, the Phasma novel by Delilah S. Dawson that we'll be reading in a few months, the Captain Phasma Marvel miniseries that's in progress right now, and it's all connected. And so you do have that pressure when you're writing new characters that you need, like, you can't take any plays off, you know, to use a sports metaphor here.
Right. That's super true. I had a point, now I can't remember what it is.
Sorry, I talked too long.
No. I literally have been talking, I feel like, for 50% of this fucking podcast, so... Somebody else can say something and come back to me.
Sorry, I'm a blob of a person. We talked about, although we did talk about this a little bit, I don't remember when, Chris might remember, about how it's easier and harder to write these known characters, known unknown characters. I don't know what... excuse me. What book we were discussing. I'm so sorry, everyone. I don't know what book we were discussing, but we did touch on this briefly.
It might have been Bloodline.
Yeah, it may have been Bloodline. I think that might be right. But, I mean, and also, I mean, yes to all of everything that we just said. And then there's also just, like, this other facet of it, which is the fandom and how much shit talking the fucking fandom does. Even if, like, we think sort of objectively they did a good idea, there are a lot of people in the fandom that don't like the way that Miller characterized Hera and Kanan, which we talked about at length in episode 17.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that garbage fire as well.
Yeah, and, you know, with the famously accepting and not at all hostile Star Wars fandom that exists on Twitter, which has actually gotten a lot of screen time, so to speak, this week on social media, with most recently with all the assholes who harassed Claudia Gray into going off Twitter.
Yes, and all the people who... Somebody made a petition to get J.J. Abrams off of episode 9, which is...
Everyone's dumb. Listen, I'm not overly thrilled with J.J. Abrams as the director for episode 9, but, like, give me a break.
Yeah, I know, like, Jesus Christ.
Come back to me when the Lucasfilm Story Group screws something up.
I know, right?
Like, because they haven't yet, so shut up.
Yeah, that's really
fine. Yes.
Another Another interesting aspect for me, though, is that since everything has to be integrated now, and, you know, somewhere in the bowels of Lucasfilm is probably a whole set of master files about every character that's ever been invented, even by the authors as original characters, and their whatever backstory they have of them and their storylines and all that stuff. And then they get picked up by other writers or in other media, and all of that has to fit. And I'm obviously thinking of John Jackson Miller created Rae Sloane, but she's a point of view character in this, obviously, but she's not a main character until you get to Aftermath, which is Chuck Wendig's trilogy. And he plucked her up and decided to do something with her story-wise, like, beyond the scope of this novel. And that's so scary. That's even scarier to me, honestly, than taking characters from a large franchise like Star Wars, like the on-screen characters, and translating that into the written word. Because, obviously, every character is someone's brainchild, but when you have on-screen characters these days, a lot of that, a lot of them are created by, you know, literally a story group, and these people are kind of an amalgamation of all the best characteristics that these people can come up with to make a composite and make a character. But when you're taking a character that's only appeared in books, like Rae Sloane, you're taking someone's baby, and you have to do them especially good justice, because there you have no visual and you have no movie that's gonna save them from being a shitty character if you fuck up.
Well, yeah, there's a growing movement online, and by growing I mean it's us three and at Southern Cynic who want a
my girl, movie. My girl, Rae Sloane.
Like I'm willing to die on this hill. Let's make it happen, Lucasfilm.
Yes, at us, Lucasfilm.
Lucasfilm will never add us.
I know.
Yeah, there's no chance they ever add us. That's fine. Whatever.
That's fine, too. But yeah, no. As a writer, that scares the living crap out of me.
Yeah. No, I can only imagine.
So, do we want to just talk about our feelings about overall about the book and the writing? Because I love this book, and not just because I love this because it's the Kinnera book, but also the writing is fantastic.
It was really good.
Yeah, like, in his production notes, Miller says that he's the kind of person who really likes to convey information about plot character through dialogue, and that really shows, because I think dialogue is especially where this book shines. All of it was perfect and really well-crafted, and just it was most of what made this book such a fun experience for me.
I feel like that also kind of throws back to the original Star Wars feel, though, because, like, the original movies, like, as amazing as they are, they don't do a lot of subtle exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for the love of God, the premise was set by a news crawl.
right.
like they did, like, that's how they literally made you read the scene setting, and, like, pretty much all you find out about the expanded universe is that Luke's dad fought in the Clone Wars, the Jedi were good, they had lightsabers, Mos Eisley is a hive of scum and villainy, the Empire is bad. Like, you get all this through dialogue, and that's, like, traditionally very traditionally, that is, like, the strongest way to deliver information within a Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that, just to back up your point, that I thought that really, A, fit in a Star Wars novel, but also contributed to this kind of old-time feel of, we are discovering this information in real time, like, thanks to the experiences of the characters.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kristen.
You're so welcome.
So now, as we do at the end of our wrap-up episodes, let's just go rapid-fire in our last few thoughts on the book. Same question we always ask. What did the form of the media add to this story? What did writing A New Dawn as a novel add to the story of Kanan and Hera and how they met?
I'm just sitting here making, like, small sobbing noises, so just, I don't know if anybody else wants to talk.
Yeah, right.
While I cry.
No, well, I thought, and I've said this about every story that we've about every novel that we've read, because it's true, and that's why they're written as novels. But, like, for this one especially, I feel like this couldn't have been done in any other form. Because you have these two characters who Lucasfilm knows are going to be major, and you want to do them justice. But you can't do it through a TV show, because there's just so much happening, and, like, this book was, you know, however many hundred pages, and really every detail was necessary to the story. And, like, you've got to put in so much detail and create that world building. And you have these two goals that Miller really accomplished of world building this, you know, between The Birth of the Empire and A New Hope version of the Empire, and introducing two new characters. And I feel like that couldn't have been done in a movie, and it couldn't have been done in a TV show. And the ability to have external and internal dialogue and show all this world building in such vivid detail could only have been done in a novel.
Right. I mean, that was the complaint with the first half of Rogue One, that there were so many characters, you know, to introduce all their backstories, and then you had to explain what Jedha was and all this other stuff. You know, a lot of people felt like it slowed the storytelling down, and, you know, you can debate that six ways from Sunday, but doing it in a novel, it feels a lot more natural, definitely.
It's funny
that much
because
shit going on, it makes sense to do it in a book.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you say that because the Rogue One novelization by Alexander Freed, who we'll read some of his stuff later, is, like, for whatever reason, an incredibly popular novelization, and, like, a lot of people say it's, like, one of their favorite Star Wars books because, like, it is able to do that world building in a way that doesn't feel like Whiplash, like some people think Rogue One did. So, like, I feel like Rogue One is the, like, and we all loved Rogue One. Like, we are not shitting on Rogue One in any way. I thought it was fantastic. But you do get a little bit of that Whiplash in the first half of it, and I feel like it really pushes the boundary of what you could do with a movie and shows how much more you can do in this case in a novel, as we saw in A New Dawn. All right. Sounds like we're all done on that one.
Chris is just like there.
Sorry.
Like, sleeping. Chris is sleeping.
We got some social media shout outs, Kate.
We do indeed. All right. So lots of interaction this week. Thank you, everyone who tweeted at us.
At Book Wars Pod.
Yes, we're on Twitter at Book Wars Pod if you would like to tweet at us. And all of y'all asked us to make our Twitter more active, and it is now. And none of you are following us, so get your shit together and follow us on Tumblr. Also at Book Wars Pod and stick some crap in our ask box, etc., etc. Anyway, so we got some really good reactions to last episode, where I got into a verbal boxing match with everyone on Tumblr who hated this book for various reasons. We have at ShannonJoy26, who says, "I am offended for John Jaxamoto that people think this about New Dawn. Like, how? What? Agree." That's all I can say.
Yeah, for sure.
That is extremely correct. And we have a longtime listener, Alex at Avenger at Heart. She's told us before that A New Dawn is probably in her top three favorite canon novels, and she's telling us this week that she goes back to it all the time. And a little tidbit, since we're going to be reading Aftermath, not soon, but next year, but again, it's that trilogy brings back Ray Sloan. And Alex says, "This could be considered a very vague spoiler for Aftermath, but Ray Sloan shows up and quotes Vidian's 'Forget the Old Way,' which I think is fascinating. Not only did they, you know, did Wendig pick up on, her character, but just, you know, just incorporate, just folding all those things in and making Star Wars this very many layered, storytelling endeavor that it is." We also have, at Celestial Intent, also chatting with us quite a bit on Twitter. She says, "As someone who's already read the Kanan comics, I found his character is exactly what I expected," referring to his character in A New Dawn, "exactly what I expect in considering who his mentor is following Order 66. That said, Zelluna herself comments that Kanan is much more than what he presents everyone he encounters. As for the Hera thing, I took it as Kanan was explicitly clear he found Hera attractive, and attraction does not just mean looks or sex." All that, just giant check mark. Totally agree. And of course, we're reading the Kanan comics next, and we're going to find out who exactly that mentor is who influenced Kanan to be the giant dumpster fire that he is in A New Dawn.
But Kate, it's a character assassination.
Oh my god. And finally, we have P.E. Polduan, who says that, who reminds us that Kanan fell in love with Hera's voice. First, you know, that's the first thing that attracts him to her in A New Dawn. And then he says, "Now he's blind and her voice is all he has." So, excuse me while I stop being on the pod and go cry in my corner, because that fucking kills me every time I think about it. So thank you everyone for chatting with us on Twitter, a few others of you. Tauntaun dude, I see you, agreeing that Rey is bae, and we agree. So, yeah, just keep talking to us on Twitter, and by us, I mean I'm the one who's running the Twitter most of the time. Please talk to me. I'm very bored at work.
But yeah, no, we really appreciate all of the interaction that y'all, like, we love that we, like, are feeling a little bit more like we're parts of the Star Wars community, even though we just started our podcast pretty recently, and
that happens to you guys. Like, thank you so much for being so welcoming and chatting with us and listening and giving us your thoughts. I mean, we value every single one of them. Like, we're fans just like you, and we just want to talk nerdy with each other, and I love how enthusiastic all of you are, and it just makes me warm and happy inside, especially during a time where a lot of shit is happening, so let's just be each other's happy place, you know?
At least no one's blown up the moon yet, though. Alright, and then our last bit that we do every time we finish a book, favorite Easter egg. Kristen, I'm assuming you don't have one.
There was no pirates. It's not fair. When am I gonna get my pirate novel?
I don't know. We need to find that. There's a short story that exists about pirates and clones and cryo freeze, and we should just read that for shits one day.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, we should just read that.
What's your favorite Easter egg, Kristen? There are pirates.
Oh my god.
We'll read that someday. Anyway.
I will go next. I had one real one and one like super deep cut. My real one was that Sloane, when she first meets Kanan in person, threatens to throw him into a trash compactor. And then also, at the very beginning of the book, there's an Every Chalice mention, which Kate and Kristen have no idea who this is, but she is a major character in Alexander Freed's Battlefront Twilight Company, the first tie-in novel for the first Battlefront game, which didn't really tie into the plot at all, because the game didn't have a single-player campaign, but it's about like the actual troops of the Galactic Civil War.
Cool.
And she's a major character in that, so I enjoyed that little, like, foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So I also have two. One of them is, you know, obviously they decide to blow apart a piece of Cinda. And Vidian makes some kind of comment, like, the Empire, it doesn't have the ability to blow up moons or planets yet. And I'm just like, yet, motherfucker, yet.
It also totally calls out, like, he knows they're building something because, like, he knows how the supply lines work, and clearly shit is being built off book.
I know. Like, I like how everyone is looking at these supply manifestos, and they're like, something is fucked up, and no one can figure out what it is except for Thrawn.
Right.
It kills me. My second one is Porza Luna goes blind at the end during the fight on the Forager. I think it's Hera says to her that, or Kanan, who says to her, well, you can always get cybernetic eyes, and she's just like, and be like Vidian, nope, that's creepy. And I just, a lot of fans have been wondering, ever since Kanan went blind at the end of season 2, why he won't get cybernetic eyes, and there are probably all kinds of reasons why, you know, the rebels being short of resources, him being creeped out by them, you know, whatever the fuck. But I just thought that was kind of an interesting thing that ties into Rebels kind of weirdly enough, because I'm not sure at the point when this book came out that they were going to choose to make Kanan blind. I'm pretty sure they didn't. So just having that connection there is pretty fascinating.
I would love to know if they knew that they were going to make Kanan blind at some point.
Well, they did at some point.
Well, no. Like, they knew, if they knew that they were going to at some point make Kanan blind, because there's a lot, when this book was written, and John Jackson Miller, definitely, if you're able to let us know that, definitely do. Yeah,
we might tweet sure at you, JJM, and ask you.
I tweet at him all the time, and I feel like one of he's like going to come into my house and punch me for like always lighting up his Twitter mentions. I'm really sorry.
Because there is a lot of like, kind of like, what almost reads as foreshadowing of like blindness and like, Zaluna's blindness and Vidian's cybernetic eyes.
And Hera's voice,
exactly. Like, there is a lot of what ends up being foreshadowing, so it's just interesting to think about.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, and that concludes our discussion on A New Dawn. Everybody just take a moment of silence for Kate that we're no longer talking about the Kanara book.
Alas.
But it's okay, because next episode, we're still talking about Kanara. We're going to be reading, woo! As we mentioned last week and at the top of the episode, going to be reading the Marvel Kanan series of comics, We're going to be reading the whole thing. Issues 1 through 12 comprises Kanan the Last Padawan and Kanan First Blood. Definitely read along with us. You can definitely find these in your local bookstore, your local library, your local comic shop, online. I know they're on the Marvel Unlimited service. So there's definitely places you can find them. We hope you read with us. And then, since we want to give people an opportunity to jump on the following week as well, because we're starting our next book after that, which is going to be Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad by Christy Golden. I've been so excited to read this book. It just came out in July, and we're finally getting around to it. And so that's what we're going to be reading. Buy it. Get it from your library. However, get it on Audible. However you read or listen to your books.
Get ready
for that one in a couple weeks, because we are excited.
So excited, especially because, you know, Christy Golden's one of the most beloved Star Wars authors. And I hear it's for very good reason, so excited to read some of her writing. And of course, this is the book that ties into the video game that is coming out next month.
Yes, 2 months. November.
We will try to play it or something. And
yes,
also, indeed. If Dad lets us, this won't be the end of Kanara, because we will try to do Kate's Kanara Corner when Rebels actually comes back. We'll give her 5 minutes to scream.
We'll see what we can do.
If permitted. So
we'll see what we can do.
So, send us a ping on Twitter if that's something you want us to do. So, otherwise, I'll just be on Twitter in the corner liking all this, like, Kanan and Hera fan art from the pod account and not saying anything to you because I am a jerk.
Right. Anyway, so that is a wrap on episode 18. Thank you so much for listening. Just to reiterate what Kate said before, we are really still continuing to be overwhelmed by the fact that any of you are listening at all. Continue to interact with us at Book Wars Pod on Twitter, bookwarspod@gmail.com, at Book Wars Pod on Tumblr. Basically, anywhere we're either Book Wars Pod or we don't exist.
Yes.
Also, if you are listening and you do like the show, please, please do rate and review and subscribe on iTunes. We only have a couple subscriptions right now. We are really trying to get more people to subscribe and review us so that other people who are interested in the Star Wars universe and interested in the Star Wars canon can join us and can listen and find the show more easily. So if you're a listener, whether you're a longtime listener who loves us or a newer listener who has just started, we definitely would love to hear, to see you review us and give us your feedback.
And if you don't like the show, I don't actually know why you're still listening, so go do something cool with your life,
I guess. That's true. I mean, this is a podcast. That's on you. So, all right. And that is it. So for Kate and Kristen, I am Chris. Thank you so much for listening to the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week. Hello, and welcome back to episode 18 of... Why are you looking at me?